Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. We're recording this on September 1st, but we can't post it till at least September 3rd. But who knows when it will actually get posted, because we're going to talk some stuff that's under embargo. So we have to wait till that embargo lifts. But we're joined today with Alex.
Hello.
And Kyle.
Hello.
Kyle always has like that TV announcer voice, right?
Don't know about that.
So we are going to first off let you know that this will be our last show for a little bit. We've got some vacations happening, so we probably won't be back for at least 3 weeks, but we're going to try and get through everything we can before then. So we're going to start with what we could actually see on Disney Plus and at drive-in movie theaters. Let's start with Phineas and Ferb, the movie, Candace Against the Universe. You could see our movie club if you want to get into a deep dive. But Alex, what did you think?
I love it. It's a really well done 90-minute story that really doesn't kind of get stale at any point. Like the TV show is usually, 11-minute little story segments. So the fact that they give you a 90-minute story that doesn't really get dry or stale is really impressive. It's a lot of fan service in terms of like what you would want from a Phineas and Ferb movie 5 years after we've had any real Phineas and Ferb new content that wasn't a Milo's Murphy Law crossover. And also, I mean, what really sets it apart is that Candace gets to be kind of the lead character, or at least her character is the one who decides kind of where the plot goes, rather than Phineas and Ferb shifting it and her just kind of following them along, trying to get them in trouble. So it felt very fresh in that way. Hilarious. So many really funny jokes, including even a whole segment that's a joke about the animation process, which if you've ever watched even like an old Disneyland special about how Disney animated films are made, you won't miss any beats in that moment. And then the music is great too. So many fun, catchy songs. The soundtrack, I highly recommend. A lot of the songs only get like 30 seconds in the movie, but you get 3 minutes of them on the soundtrack. And they're all really fun, and several of them stay with you and have been stuck in my head all week.
I really enjoyed it too. It kind of made me realize how much I missed Phineas and Ferb. You know, when it was kind of there's a lot of episodes. There's more than 104 episodes. And it made me yearn for more. So I hope it's successful and that there's more to come. But as we said, you can catch a full wrap up of that in our LP Movie Club. Another thing we saw recently, Alex and I saw it at a drive-in movie theater. I'm guessing Kyle hasn't seen it, but is New Mutants, which I believe after 72 years in the vault was finally released. What do you think of that one, Alex?
I didn't hate it. I mean, I will say X-Men is my favorite of the Marvel comics line, and I quite like most of the films, but I do agree, like, there have been too many of them. This one kind of fits in the universe, but doesn't really like brush up against it in any real way. They talk about the X-Men, and this is not your typical X-Men or even Marvel film. This is really like almost a psychological thriller. I wouldn't classify it as horror. I don't do well personally with horror films, and I had no problem really with the content of New Mutants, but it was fairly suspenseful. After seeing it, when we saw it, like, I really enjoyed it. And I think part of it was just, it was kind of mind-blowing after 6 months to be sitting in our car, but with another audience watching something at the same time that was new. Because we've gone to the drive-in once before to see The Wizard of Oz, which, like, I've seen 100 times. But, that was cool, getting to see something new. Afterwards, like, the more that I dissect it, the more problems I see with it. It's not great. I'd probably give it a low C after the fact, but I mean, honestly, if you're a fan of X-Men, if you like psychological thrillers, it's kind of, you know, Hitchcock-esque, but with more sci-fi fantasy thrown in. I would definitely recommend checking it out, especially if you have a drive-in theater near you or a pop-up one that's going to be playing it.
Yeah, it's not great, but I really believe that this movie was benefited by having this sort of pause and having no other major movies around it. You know, this was supposed to come out a couple months after Black Widow, and it would have been trounced by that. But since there's been nothing, and it was a chance to go see it at a movie theater, actually, we saw it at the drive-in, which I think helped it, actually, because it's kind of a, it's not a great movie. It's not super, you know, but if you're just sort of relaxing in your car watching it, it was great to get out of the house and do it. So yeah, I think, I mean, if COVID had a silver lining, it's that I saw New Mutants and I enjoyed the experience. Once again, not a great movie, might never ever see it again, but I feel like having a chance to see a movie that doesn't mean anything to me really, but still get to see it, it was a nice experience.
And it is, like, just according to Box Office Mojo, which, like, I don't even understand these numbers anymore, but New Mutants was the number one movie for the weekend. It made $7 million, which I'm going to guess probably, like, it wouldn't have made much more than that anyway, just with all the bad buzz around it, if it had come out with other competition. And then in number three, which I don't know if this even went to any theaters or if this was just a digital only release, Bill and Ted Face the Music, which I feel like had a lot more buzz, but it reportedly only made about $1 million over the weekend.
Yeah, but that one was also released digitally. So it's, you know, as you brought up a good point, these numbers, I don't even know what they're supposed to mean anymore, you know, at least for this period. So In the end, I don't even know if it matters. You know, Disney is just getting it out the gate.
Yeah, it does say that Bill and Ted is playing on 1,000 screens, whereas New Mutants was on 2,500. But like, yeah, with Bill and Ted available digitally, I don't know if this counts those numbers. And I'm curious to find out, you know, obviously this is a little bit jumping ahead in our conversation, but curious to find out if Disney or when they will release what Mulan makes from its Premier Access release.
I don't know that they have any reason to tell you, unless the numbers are really good. Like, if they're amazing, they'll release them for Wall Street reasons. But, where else do you companies, except like box office, do companies say, oh yeah, this is how much we made over the weekend?
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing that is okay with movies, but it's really not
good. It happens in music. It happens in music too, like music sales charts, and then you can like equate that to how much money an album pushed or a song.
Yeah, but
pushed.
I think they don't get that necessarily, or they didn't historically get them from like the record labels. They would get them, you know, and then so eventually the record labels would say, "Okay, we'll tell you," because you know they could talk to the stores and find out how much they sold. So it's Netflix doesn't really divulge ratings and that, you know, viewership unless it's a reason to celebrate. So I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it'll be pretty obvious because it's the only thing they do like this or Premier Access, you know, depending on where they allocate the money. Like, I think they're going to have to say somehow, but I don't think you're going to end the weekend and they're going to be like, oh yeah, you know, we 200 million people signed up or whatever number signed up for Mulan Premier Access. Just like they don't really do that with the UFC fights that they sell. You know, they don't really tell you like, oh, this many people bought the pay-per-view for ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
Kyle, I mean, I know you didn't see the movie, but I know you definitely have your finger on the sort of trappings of changes in the movie industry. Do you have any thoughts?
I think they made the right move releasing it now the way they did. I think it has the distinction of being the first major release. I mean, depending on how you define major, since all of this. And, you know, once they kind of said, we're going to go, like, they didn't push it back again. That's kind of when we got the announcements that theaters were reopening. And now Tenet, which I feel like they had announced international releases. I don't think they had announced domestic ones at that time. That sort of popped back in. So I feel like they kind of, maybe they owed the theaters one after deciding to pull Mulan. So I think it gets a lot of credit for that. And I don't think 7 million is bad. Given the circumstances, I actually think it's, you know, fairly strong. I think Alex is definitely right. I think probably if it would have opened normally, 10 to 15. So right. I think it was a good call.
Yeah. And I will also say, I mean, I think it was a good choice to make the first, you know, quote unquote, major movie release, because I don't think anyone is, I think it gives the movie theaters a chance to kind of test the waters of how willing are people to come back and sit in a shared airspace for 2 hours, because New Mutants is the kind of movie that probably nobody is willing to risk their life to see. And so like the people who like don't feel any hesitation to go to the movies probably showed up to see New Mutants. Whereas if they had brought out something like Mulan or Tenet, just because of all of the Christopher Nolan fandom, you know, there's probably a certain amount of people who like wouldn't have been able to stay away, even if it wasn't a smart decision for them to go out, you know?
Yeah. I think this, they played this perfectly. You know, something like Mulan wouldn't be able to withstand this kind of criticism, you know, in terms of not being able to access it. Yet something like New Mutants, you know, it's going to be someplace, someplace time. No one is heartbroken that they don't get to see it. So I think it worked out perfectly. But speaking of Mulan, Alex and I actually saw it in March. And the reason I said we can't post this until Thursday is that's when the review embargo is. And I figured we should hear what Alex has to say about the movie.
And I also have a YouTube video about it as well. But I really like this live-action adaptation of Mulan. One of my bigger criticisms of some of Disney's live-action movies is that they haven't really done enough to kind of differentiate themselves from the animated version, and particularly like most amount of shade thrown to Jon Favreau's Lion King for just being a shot-for-shot remake. Mulan is fairly brave in its approach. There are some moments that they attempt to kind of recreate visually, and in the trailer they show everybody kind of doing their practice battles, and it's almost like straight out of I'll Make a Man Out of You from the animated version. But they don't try and recreate like the father and Mulan sitting under the magnolia blossom tree moment. Like, that's not in this version. And the other thing I'll say is they've tweaked it quite a bit. There's really two villains, and the villain that they added, Zhan Yang, I think adds a ton to the film. Her whole character and plot really gave it new meaning in a way that I wasn't expecting when I went into it. I already knew about some of the other changes, particularly the part of Li Shang, who was her like commander or supervisor in the animated version, and then she ended up falling in love with him 22 years later. That's looked at very differently. So I knew that he was now on the same level as her. He's just an army recruit like anybody. And, you know, her being perceived when she's a guy as, you know, very, very weak and not tough. He kind of shines some pity on her and becomes a friend. And then it develops into something more. So I quite like all of that. It's not a musical. They do have the song reflection in the end credits. And when we saw it, it was a Chinese version of Reflection, and it played after Christina Aguilera's new song, Loyal, Brave, and True. They just put out a new Christina Aguilera version of Reflection, and I'm not sure if they've replaced it in the end credits with that version too. Part of me hopes that it was just another like marketing effort to push the film, because they put out the other music video back in February, about a month ahead of its planned release, which, you know, is pretty typical. And then of course it's been 7 months since that song came out. So I hope that's all they did was just, you know, have her record another version of Reflection to help push the marketing of the film again. I'm not sure how much that really does for it. But yeah, Disney overall,
I believe you misspoke. Disney legend Christina Aguilera.
I have a hard time with that. But yeah, I mean, overall, I really enjoyed this version of Mulan. I think I would rank it definitely in my top five of the live action adaptations that Disney's done, but probably my number two, right after The Jungle Book, I think is where I place it.
I would probably be right with you. I enjoyed that this was, it's really different, not in a bad way. I mean, it is its own thing, much like, I don't know, I'm trying to find something that would be similar, but it takes the log line, but it's not, and it kind of like how Dumbo was a completely different movie. Now, I didn't like the live action adaptation of Dumbo.
I was going to say, but in a good way.
But this is its own thing in a good way. It's a complete opposite from Jon Favreau's Lion King, which I enjoyed. I don't mean to deride it, but it was very similar, whereas this is very different.
Yeah, I think the reason I bring up Lion King is for most of these, I mean, I feel like you can watch them both back to back and get different things from them. Like I can sit down and watch the 1992 Aladdin and then watch the 2019 Aladdin. And it's the same story more or less and with some of the same music, but I'm going to feel different things in the experience by watching those two different versions. Lion King, I can watch the animated version, I can watch the Jon Favreau version, and there's really nothing in the Jon Favreau version that I can't get out of the animated version. But honestly, the characters look so much more appealing in the animated version that's the one I'm forever going to go back to. that's why I hold that one up as like, why does it exist? Just because it's so similar that there's really nothing that sets itself apart.
Yeah, so I'm glad it's finally getting to see the light of day. I don't have a problem with this premiere access thing. I know some people are all in a tizzy. I think it's a little overpriced. I probably would have gone, you know, $20.99 or, you know, $19.99 or $24.99. I feel like $29.99 is a little bit much just compared to other movies. I still think it's a value if you compare it to, you know, going to a movie theater with a family of four. But, I mean, it's not bad enough that I will not partake. So,
yeah. And after our last episode, you know, Kyle brought up a good point, which is for a lot of people, you know, you're paying $7.99 for the right to pay $29.99 to see it. And I hadn't really thought about that. And I can definitely see that criticism in our situation, because we prepaid 3 years for Disney Plus in that incredible deal that they did during the D23 Expo, which anybody could access. You didn't have to be at the Expo for that. I don't necessarily look at it as I'm paying, you know, $7.99 a month to, or $6.99 a month to have this right. But I can see where some people would. The other thing I want to say is, you know, Trolls World Tour, Scoob, Bill and Ted, like, I don't consider any of these as on the same level as Mulan. Mulan in theaters, I think, would have crossed the $1 billion mark worldwide if all had gone according to plan. Trolls, maybe, but I don't think Scoob would have. Bill and Ted definitely wouldn't have. So I also factor in that. Like, Mulan is a tentpole film, so, you know, paying $10 more than the cost to see Scoob kind of makes sense in some way.
I understand people feeling like they spend $6.99 for the right to pay $29.99. But to me, Disney Plus is, forget Mulan, is still like something I have. It's like, you know, I guess like paying for health insurance for the right to get my flu shot. Like, I'm going to have it anyway. So if you're signing up for I don't see signing up for Disney Plus so you can have access to Mulan. I'm guessing Disney would love that, but I feel like it's more Disney Plus subscribers who are subscribed anyway get access to Mulan. I mean, kind of, I guess it depends on your situation. But for me, I don't understand how not everyone in the world has Disney Plus at the price point. But you know, I guess that's all in your perspective, and no matter what your perspective, that's fine. It's your money. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, and like I said last time, I feel like the diehard Disney fans who would have been at opening weekend of Mulan are the Disney Plus subscribers, and the people who would have just gotten it through the word of mouth probably wouldn't pay $29.99 to see it, whether they had Disney Plus or not.
So that's movies that are out or coming out, but we got some news about a movie coming out next summer now, was going to be November, with Raya and the Last Dragon. Kyle, do you want to take this?
Yeah, so the interesting thing here is that while EW released a couple of new stills and artwork from the movie, they also kind of dropped, might not be the right word, but basically last year at D23, Cassie Steele of Degrassi, the Next Generation fame, was announced to be the voice of Rhea, and now that role has been recast, and the girl whose name just completely slipped my mind is playing it instead.
Kelly Marie Tran?
Yeah, her. Rose Tico from Star Wars. So yeah, I think that's definitely interesting. It sounded like kind of the way they've had to alter production because of COVID may have played a small part in the decision. But I guess we'll never know. But I'm just excited because I'm keeping a list of all the announcements of things that get revealed at D23 that later get retcons.
Is John Cryer on your list?
Oh yeah, he's at the top of the list.
Okay.
He was the OG. One of the things in that Entertainment Weekly article is they kept talking about like how much Kelly Marie Tran brings to the role and that she's done some improv that they've ended up using and that has like influenced story decisions. They also spent a lot of time in this article talking about the Asian Story Trust that they put together after their research trips, which they did the same kind of thing for Moana, and look how much that paid off just in terms of how much the culture embraced Moana and how much that film means to people, even people who aren't of Pacific Island culture. And so I think that's an interesting point. I was kind of reading between the lines, maybe a little too much, that maybe they just were dissatisfied with either Cassie's performance or the way the story was going with changes and her voice not lending itself to that. I think it was probably more closely to the latter, just knowing how much these Disney animated stories changed throughout the pipeline. That probably got to a point where her voice didn't fit what the character had become. But yeah, I mean, it's sad. I feel bad for her. I mean, personally, like, I don't care if I'm voicing like a crowd character that doesn't get a full line, but just is like ambient noise. I would love to have my voice in a Disney animated anything, and I'm not even an actor. And I can only imagine like being in the business, getting your shot and having it pulled out from under you. I feel the same way about the girl who originally voiced Penny and Bolt, who got dubbed over with Miley Cyrus at the last minute to have another name on the poster. But I just think it's so sad when that happens.
Yeah, I'm curious to know. I don't know if they're going to do an Into the Unknown type docuseries about Rhea Last Dragon. I mean, it's probably hard considering it's done remotely. But, you know, sometimes we find out why and sometimes we don't. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Kyle, do you have any insight as to what you think it might be?
I mean, I do think maybe issue, because I mean, Cassie probably lives in Canada too. Not that should be a huge issue for working from home. But no, I think I'm sure it's probably closer to what Alex is saying about how things change and, you know, just doesn't work. Like what happened to John Cryer? They're like, you know what? We're looking more for like a Dane Cook type than a John Cryer.
Oh, wait, he's very available.
That's the first and only time someone's ever said, we're looking for a Dane Cook type. I think Dane Cook, like, this is like the highlight of his career at this point, right? Planes, Fire and Rescue.
I don't know. Employee of the Month is okay.
Never saw it. Also, never heard of it.
It's got Jessica Simpson and him, and I think Andy Dick, isn't it?
Wow, that sounds like something.
It's an all-star cast set in a Costco-type business.
So moving to our friends at the American Broadcasting Company, production is starting to get back in business. And with that, they've announced some premiere dates for unscripted programming for the fall season. So Dancing with the Stars is going to begin on September 14th, as was previously announced. They're bringing back Celebrity Family Feud, Press Your Luck, and Match Game on Thursday nights, which Match Game was on, I think all three of these were on Sunday, but now they're on Thursday. Bachelorette comes on October 13th. That's probably the most amazing season ever. Shark Tank, October 16th. And then on Sunday, October 18th, America's Funniest Home Videos, Supermarket Sweep, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and Kart Sharks. So this is all game shows, which, you know, primarily or reality shows that don't necessarily have the intricacies of a full scripted production. So it's a way that they can get back into business. They also announced that, you know, the Emmys are coming. They're going to do a special two-part Blackish on October 4th, which is partly animated, kind of focused on the election. So, which isn't really part of the season. I don't know all like the legal ease about it all. And then also the ABC will have the NBA Finals. So that'll probably take them through part of this. And then hopefully as we get closer, they'll have more information about when scripted programming will return to the network.
There are some in production. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some in production, like particularly like in Canada. And there's been some things going on in LA, but I think it's very, very limited because of some union stuff that they're still working out.
Yeah. Have you seen, I don't have a TikTok, but I've seen reposts of TikToks from Haley. I can't think of her last name, from the Goldbergs. She's been sharing behind the scenes footage of them, how they've been filming that show and all the different precautions they have. And that's been really interesting. And then I think I just saw that Grey's is going back in a few weeks.
And Grace was one of the first shows to shut down because there's some senior cast members on that show. So I think they were trying to keep everybody safe. So, you know, I guess this is all happening a lot faster than I thought, maybe, you know, a couple weeks ago. But we will have content again on television. Alex has been watching General Hospital, which has been back for a couple weeks.
Yes, after reviewing the story of Soaps, the ABC special, which was back in like April or May, I decided to get into a story and chose the one that's on ABC. And it was kind of a good time to get into it because I got to see like the last 2 weeks of new episodes, which they really stretched out, and they would keep like pausing and giving you like a lot of flashbacks to kind of stretch out the last remaining storylines that they had. And so it was kind of nice because as a new viewer, I got a lot of exposition on what I needed to know pretty quickly. And then they just started like doing themed weeks. So like 1 week it would be about like a specific couple on the show, and like it would go back like up to 10 years and kind of give you some good backstory. So now that it returned in August, but like when it returned, I felt like I now had a good handle on who everybody is, because that's a show with a lot of characters. And it is also funny, you know, when you watch like the Disney World Holiday Parade and you'll see Kelly and Ryan sitting in Town Square on Main Street, but the way the camera is, it looks like the castle is right behind them, like they're sitting right in front of it somehow. I think they use a lot of those camera angles because there are times when like they're staged around like a kitchen island, and there'll be one character on the left side of the island, one character on the right, and one character in the middle, and they'll do these over-the-shoulder shots that make it look really intimate, like they're right there with one another, but then they'll do a wide shot and you're like, oh yeah, they're all 6 feet apart. Or like when they're having a conversation on a couch, they'll be on opposite ends of the couch. which has been kind of interesting to watch. And also they've refrained from doing like love scenes so far since it's come back.
Soaps without love scenes. That's interesting.
They still keep it spicy. Don't but get
can,
me wrong. So
can you really tell, like, if I mean, you're probably not saying by like, you know, it's obvious, but can you tell if you watch it that there's definitely like mitigation?
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, like the oldest character, Sonny Corinthos' dad, who has dementia, when the show came back, they kind of brought him in for like a scene to then put him in intensive care. So that was kind of like you take the oldest, most vulnerable cast member on the show and you get him in and out real quick and like basically write him out. I also survived my first like actor replacement, which was really funny. I'd always heard that soaps do this, but like I hadn't seen one happen. And all of a sudden, like an announcer comes on and is like, the role of this character will temporarily be played by so-and-so. And then like she turns around and like you're back in the scene. That was fun too. But yeah, they've done some things. You can also tell they're kind of working with smaller casts. Like they did the Nurses Ball this year, which if you're not in the know, it was like, you know, the big springtime event and characters would perform songs and it's like everybody in one room. And within the show, they haven't mentioned coronavirus or anything like that, but they said this year they're doing it virtually because everybody's busy, like everyone's too busy to gather. And then they also kept saying, like, because the Nurses Ball on the show has always been about raising money for AIDS research and AIDS awareness. And it all stems back, as I learned recently, to the 90s when a character on the show died from AIDS. But within that plot, they were doing it all remotely, but they were also saying, like, this year we're also thanking our healthcare heroes and all of our essential frontline workers. So it was kind of like wink, wink, nod, nod. We know what's happening outside these walls, but we're not bringing the reality of the situation in here just yet. So that was kind of interesting. I'm curious if they will at some point, being that it's not that General Hospital has much hospital in it, but being that it's a show called General Hospital, you would expect that at some point it hits the show.
So does of the broadcast of the returning shows, or I should say of the unscripted shows that are coming, is there some one show that everyone's like most excited to either have come back or start?
Well, I have one. Yeah. Supermarket Sweep. Far and away. And they put up like 10 episodes of the 90s version on Netflix, which is just so much fun to watch. And that's that I've been excited for since they announced it. I just think that's going to be so great. But you mentioned Millionaire, and I really enjoyed the Celebrity Millionaire with Jimmy Kimmel. So is Jimmy Kimmel returning as host with like regular Joes in the hot seat?
No, it's it's going to be celebrity contestants as well as frontline heroes.
Okay.
So the celebrities will be playing for charity. The frontline heroes will be paying for prizes.
Cool.
And I believe it's already returned to broadcast. I mean, to not broadcast, to filming. But
and with Jimmy Kimmel as the host?
Yeah, with Jimmy Kimmel.
Cool.
So, yeah, sounds like they don't have the audience back yet, which is not a surprise because they're still having to ask the host lifeline, which might be the dumbest lifeline ever, but unless you get a man show question.
No, he was you saw it. Like, he was surprisingly knowledgeable about a lot of those things. I think there was only one time on Celebrity Millionaire where somebody asked him and he was like, you should have swapped this one.
I think I'm also most excited for Supermarket Sweep. But I also am glad Card Sharks is coming back. I was kind of curious as to why it missed the last cycle there. And I like Joel McHale a lot. But I will say, going to Dancing with the Stars for a second, I'm a little sad for Tom Bergeron, mostly because, like, well, you know, he's gone. But then also we were watching The Muppets last night because Becca and I are prepping for this podcast idea we had. Anyway, I forgot that in the first episode, Kermit's like, you went to a room of stars and you brought back Tom Bergeron. So now I'm really sad. He's a very tragic character, in my opinion.
Yeah. And to me, I remember the first two expos where he did the Legends Awards. And do you remember when Marie Osmond fainted and he was like the most professional person ever? in handling that situation. Ryan Lochte too. For some reason,
didn't faint,
I just but... don't. No disrespect to Tyra Banks, but I just feel like when it comes to hosting, like being a MC, not a celebrity, not a personality, he's about as good as it gets. So I don't know why they made this change or why they felt they needed to make this change, but we'll see. Not that I watch it on a regular basis. I usually just watch Disney Night, but we'll find out.
Yeah, that was me as well. I mean, I never was a huge Dancing with the Stars fan. I enjoyed Disney Night, but I do have an affinity for Tom Bergeron. I think in particular, just because of America's Funniest Home Videos. And I do think it's really sad the way, just even the way the news was broken, that like it first came from him, I think through a tweet saying, I've just been informed that I'm not invited back for Dancing with the Stars. And like Tom Bergeron doesn't seem like a problematic character that they would be having trouble with behind the scenes. You know, so it almost seems like they just wanted a rating boost. And I thought, I mean, is America's Next Top Model not happening anymore? That was never my kind of show, but that was Tyra Banks' show, right?
I believe it was, but I don't know if it's still on or not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like her. I don't dislike her or anything. And I find her personality to be very warm. I think she had a talk show for a little while. I think I saw a couple episodes. And I've enjoyed her in like the several acting roles that she's had over the years. Coyote Ugly, Life Size. But I mean, I don't dislike her, but Tom Bergeron is just so likable and so hard to replace that I don't understand why he was out. I could see them bringing her in as co-host, but whatever. I mean, it also, the announcement wasn't just that she's hosting, she's also producing. So.
Yeah. But I think that might be a way to get her right. Like, I don't think she's, I mean, I'm not saying she's not involved in the process, cause I'm sure she is, but it, you know, a lot of times the stars of the show are producers of the show too. But,
yeah.
You know, I don't think that they're always, you know, always focused on, you know, the set and all this other stuff. You know, I don't know if I just can't imagine that BBC was like, oh no, we really need Tyra's input. No disrespect to Tyra, but you know, they produce a show forever. So, but I could be wrong. But moving to the parks, they announced recently that the Polynesian's being delayed. And they're going to take this time to redo the rooms. Now, the Vacation Club rooms are still open. So therefore, you know, certain infrastructure is still open as well. But the rooms are going to be getting a Moana touches. And they're going to be doing some renovations to the Great Ceremonial House. So I think this is kind of a blessing in that, you know, they don't need the room capacity, so it's better to do this and actually refurbish something than, you know, just have it closed. So, and there's plenty of Disney hotels. I don't think this is a big deal.
Didn't they just redo the Polynesian, though? Like, I remember them putting out a Disney Parks blog post. What was it?
So they added the Shrug Tiki not too long ago. I mean, it doesn't feel like that long ago.
Well, they put out a Disney Parks blog post that was about some original Mary Blair concept art. I think even for like Enchanted Tiki Room that they like inverted colors on and used in the bathrooms in like a redesign of the rooms. And I feel like that wasn't more than 5 years ago.
Well, and I haven't
seen it Polynesian in forever. But
when they redid the Great Ceremony House and sort of the facilities when they opened up the bungalows, or not, you know, and the Divication Club, but that was done between 2013 and 2015. So it's about 5 years. But I don't think they've done any work on the room product for a while.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I know some people on Twitter have been vocal about their dislike of the bringing a Disney story into the rooms. I don't see why. I personally, like with the more recent room redos kind of property wide where they went to this standard white bed sheets, white walls, like I found them to be much less Disney. And in January, I got to do a resort showcase tour. And like a good example of that was when we went to All Star. And like All Star, you know, obviously it's a value resort. But when you walked into those rooms, you always had at least a Disney piece of art. You had the star-shaped light fixtures, star-shaped knobs on the furniture and stuff. And like when I walked in there now, obviously they had this like huge movement against carpet, get carpet out of every room. It was kind of their thing. But like you walk in now and it's just like wooden looking floors, wooden looking furniture, white bedspread, and like one piece of art on the wall. And I was like, this is really boring. This looks like a Hyatt house.
Well, I know people hate that too. So I feel like if Disney fans are saying that they're upset about the Moana touches that it's going to have, they're just speaking out of both sides of their mouth. They don't want things to change. It comes down to that. You're not going to make them happy.
Well, and there's a difference between like going full All-Star, like classic All-Star where it's just in your face, but having little character nods in the bedspread and stuff that's been around forever. And you know, I just don't see a major issue with it. And
I will also say, like, I love Port Orleans and I love moderate resorts. But like once I saw the Princess and the Frog style princess rooms at Port Orleans French Quarter, like there was no going back. I don't want to go into the non-princess themed rooms over there because they're just so Disney and so fun. Having a magic lamp-shaped water faucet in the bathroom, like I don't not want that ever again.
So yeah, but I mean Disney. If there's anything I've learned in the last year, it's Twitter mobs don't necessarily reflect reality. You know, because they want things to change, they don't want things to change, and you'll find someone who agrees on both sides of those issues. But speaking of delays, Ken Poprock, who I affectionately call Ken Poprock, showed some images outside of Team Disney Anaheim of them installing the main beam for the show building for Mickey's Runaway Railway, which is coming to Disneyland, recently opened at Walt Disney World. And sort of embedded in the tweet in the bottom is that it's now opening in 2023. Originally, it was announced as coming in 2022. There's been a delay. Can't imagine why. It's not so much that there's a delay that really bothers me, but I'm really tired of these, hey, here's a news story, and then the last line is some, like, the actual news, because, I don't know, it just, I guess that's what you're supposed to do in marketing, but it comes across as a little shady.
Yeah. Like, look, we put up something. By the way, this is all going to be late.
Right.
But yeah, do they sell Pop Rocks in the park?
I don't know, but they should. Well, they don't sell anything right now in the park.
Okay. Very smart. So historically, have they sold Pop Rocks? Because what I want them to do is like a bundle called like the Kent Poprock Pop Rock bundle at the confectionery, where it's like his like four favorite flavors of Pop Rocks.
But then they're just going to have to get rid of it in 3 months when they shuffle with everything again. Although his tenure has already lasted longer than Kevin Mayer's at TikTok. So he's coming up.
Oh, I'm doing that meme of the guy going like, what?
There's a lot of those memes. Yeah, well. I pictured four when you said that.
I was thinking of the guy that like perfectly loops as he like drops out of frame with his mouth open. Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the one I was thinking.
I'm thinking Kent Poprock was, or I'm sorry, Kevin Mayer was sitting at TikTok like that dog with the coffee in the fire kitchen going, this is fine.
Yeah, he
did he make it 30 days?
I think he made it 100 days.
Oh, was that long? I have no concept of time anymore.
But to me, like, it's funny because
it was like five Scaramucci's.
So we, Kyle and I, when he left, were like, wow, that seems like an odd decision considering what was happening. And I'm like, well, you know, he must know something we don't. He's Kevin Mayer. But nope, Kyle and I were right. He should have stayed at DTCI.
Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. It's so ironic that his time was up so fast at a place called TikTok.
Yes.
I enjoyed all the Kesha jokes I got to make when he was leaving.
So also at the parks, there's been some news from Galaxy's Edge, including, I guess, Ashley Eckstein revealed a new color-changing Legacy Lightsaber will be available this fall at Walt Disney World and perhaps Disneyland. Who knows? Also, they are bringing Batuu to the Sims, Sims 4. So I ordered a copy of The Sims, which is my first ever Sims thing since SimCity.
I'm getting so nostalgic. I think I played all three first gen Sims for the computer and loved them. It's a huge time suck though.
Also, you could go to Target and
maybe
we'll go to get the Galactic Outpost Trading Post. Galaxy's Edge Trading Outpost merchandise.
If you're lucky.
So I went to it was supposed to be out August 30th. I go to my Target bright and early. I go there. I get there. There's some Star Wars folks waiting. And I'm waiting to see what's going on. I get in. We all kind of go to the toy aisle. And there's a guy there. And he goes, looks at us. And says, oh, it's the 30th. And then he goes back. And we wait there for about 20 minutes. And then he comes out with the merchandise on a cart, and he slowly puts it on the shelves. And as he puts it on the shelves, people grab it. It was very weird and not terribly professional.
Yep. And you didn't end up getting the one thing you were there to try and get.
No, but that's okay. I got everything I needed online. So, you know.
But yeah, just from what I could see online, and mainly because Mike down in Burbank, he went to a Target that was very well prepared and seemingly had a lot of stock compared to most. But there were reports of some stores getting one plush for their allotment, other stores getting nothing, and then quite a few stores having it sitting in the back but not putting it out, which I know that Disney's partnership with Target goes beyond this one thing, but I would hope that Disney Consumer Products is aware of kind of the blunder that was caused by this event and doing something on Target's end to make sure it doesn't happen again, because it reflects bad on Disney's end too.
Well, I also don't know why they felt the need to make it a big event. You know, they could have just put it out and then, it doesn't matter, right? It just shows up when it shows up. But if you put out a release date, it's got to be there on the release date. I don't know why they picked a Sunday, because it's a weird day to do it. Targets aren't probably used to it.
You know what it is? It's the weekly ad cycle. Because I had an issue. This is so stupid. But years ago, when they brought out the Princess Diaries movies on Blu-ray, they had made it this Target event. It was a Target exclusive for a month. And it was supposed to come out on a Sunday. And it was even in the weekly ad. And so I went to get it on that Sunday and, I'm walking around the store looking for it, not finding it. I go online, and this was maybe the first year of you being able to order something and pick it up in store at Target. And I said, look, on the phone, it says you have it in stock. I could place the order here and stick around, and in an hour, the counter would hand it to me, or you could just go in the back and get it. And the guy was like, well, movies don't come out until Tuesdays. I'm like, but this one came out today. Here's your weekly ad. And it was nobody knew about this thing. And it was, again, it's stupid. It was just a one product release, but Disney had timed it with that thing at Target specifically. And that was in Orlando, spitting distance from Disney property.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think, was there any other Galaxy's Edge news? Not really.
There's the new medallion payment.
Oh, that's right, the Spira. Now it's silver. And people seem to care, but I don't know why.
Well, I think people care because it was so hard to get the first version. They sold out at Disneyland so fast, I think before the land officially opened, when it was just in previews. And they never came back in stock. And then at Disney World, they lasted a little bit longer, but they did sell out there too. And then, it was just supposed to be their version of Disney dollars. Or you can go to the Wizarding World at Universal and get Wizarding Gold coins to spend on merchandise. And so it's really their equivalent of that. And for a lot of Star Wars fans, they care. And then also it's nice because it's a souvenir. It's not just a plastic gift card. It's, this weighty metal thing. So I get it. I looked at it and thought, you know, gee, if I was going to spend, because I think originally you had to spend like $100 to get it. Like you had to preload it with $100 and then you could have it. You still do. And then now I guess there's like a pay. Yeah. Now you have to pay like a $5 fee for it. So you're essentially buying it and committing to spending $100.
Can you imagine trying to find a way to spend $100 at Disney?
Well, and you don't have to spend it just in Galaxy's Edge. Like that's the other thing. You can, you know, use it at every quick service you're going to encounter over the course of 4 days and you'll spend $100 easily. You know, but like, I get it. I think part of that fee is probably because it sold out so fast the first time that they're like, well, there's big enough interest to just, you know, sell it at cost.
I think it sold out quickly initially, but I feel like it must have come back because I got mine at Disneyland, the original one, not the new silver one, obviously, but the week of the expo.
Maybe they did come back and say, I guess I never bothered to ask. I just heard that they had sold out and then never heard anything else about them.
Like we weren't even going to buy it. Like we weren't even going to seek it out. But the lady actually called it. Like we went into the thing and she called us over. It's like, hey, do you plan on spending the day here? Well, you should buy one of these. Like, you know, she's trying to suggestive sell us. So I can't imagine it was that hot of a commodity as people. I think it was just timing of when people were rushing it.
Gotcha. That could be.
But yeah, I think it's weird that they suddenly started charging for it. Like it kind of makes sense and it kind of doesn't. I mean, I guess the other one's bronze, so maybe next is gold.
Yeah. I mean, when Swarovski did their diamond encrusted or crystal encrusted Disney gift card at that one Destination D event, there was a fee for that.
And nobody cared.
And nobody cared. I loved how the gift shop, like they announced it right before going on break and the gift shop was expecting to have like this mad rush of people. And I guess like two people showed up to buy it.
But yeah, I'm just thinking like if it, like the entire, not the entire point, but it's essentially a free souvenir, except that it gets you to spend $100 at Disney, which as you mentioned, isn't hard, but you know, you are giving Disney $100 up front. So at this time, it seems like probably the worst time to be putting a restriction on that and making you pay an extra $5. Like you think you'd want people to give you $100 and front you that money right now. But what do I know?
True. True, true.
So moving ahead, you know, there's we're hoping Disneyland will be reopening soon because we hope everything will be in check and they can. So hopefully by the time we talk again, we'll have more information about that. We also are apparently celebrating Pixar Fest this month, but I don't know why. And there's very little support for it. So that's happening as well. And at the end of the month, we have Secret Society of Secondborn Royals coming and a whole lot more. So follow us all month. And before we wrap up, I just want to check with Alex and Kyle, see if they got anything they want to cover before we go say goodbye. So Kyle?
I'll just say that people should tune in on Tuesday and Saturday nights to our YouTube channel and watch Doobie and Gideon's Disney Trivia Live. And then on Mondays, we have our movie clubs that you should watch as well. And then random other stuff. You should just subscribe and hit the bell and you'll get all sorts of live content.
Absolutely. And stuff you want and stuff you don't.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but yeah, you sum it up nicely.
You know, you can see it pop up and decide if you want to tune in. And if you don't, no, it's okay. Alex, what you got?
The most recent thing that's coming up and probably an event that has more support than Pixar Fest is Big Cat Week is coming back on Nat Geo Wild. I got to review the premiere special, Jade-Eyed Leopard, and it was really cool, and I recommend it. You know, just a cool way to learn about more about our big cats and especially learn more about what we can do to help protect them and why they're so important to the ecosystems they live in.
Well, thanks, guys. Kyle, have a wonderful trip to Las Vegas.
Oh, thanks.
Alex, have a wonderful trip to the Walt Disney World Resort.
I hope you also have a wonderful trip to the Walt Disney World Resort. I hope to see you there. It'll be weird if you're not.
I hope so. Let me know where you're at. Now, get me a park pass. And we will talk to you when we're all back from our first vacations of the year because we've been waiting for COVID to be over and now we're ready to do something. So
it's not over, just to be clear.
It's not over. Not over. It's, no, I'm not saying it's. I'm not saying COVID's over. Just for, but now places are prepared to house us and enjoy our company.
And we're driving across the country.
Yeah, and we've carefully assessed the risk of everything we're coming in contact with doing it, given all of the safety precautions that everyone from airlines to the hotels to the parks are doing. We feel fairly safe doing this, and also we plan to self-quarantine afterwards to not introduce anything into our home area. So we're doing it, I think, as smartly as you could do it without not doing it.
And actually, Disney's National Geographic had a great scientifically based article about air travel. You know, it wasn't pro or con really, but it really gave you the facts, and I think helped at least me put myself at ease, because you feel like you're in a tight space with a bunch of people, but apparently
with the same air circling over. Yeah, that really helped me as well, kind of feel more comfortable taking this trip, because I mean, essentially, the air on the plane is new air like every 15 minutes, because it is pulling in air from outside the plane through filters. They've upgraded filters on the planes. And if everybody's wearing their masks and you have those filters in place, it's very low risk. Like the National Geographic article basically said, your time spent in a supermarket, which I do typically once a week, that is a higher risk environment. The air is not circulated fast enough and everything lingers much longer and you walk through it.
Well, thanks everybody. We hope everyone stays safe and does everything they need to do to remain safe for themselves and their loved ones. And we will wrap up just in a moment, but I do want to take a minute to just remember Chadwick Boseman, who passed away suddenly from our perspective on Friday night. He's the first Avenger we have lost. Not only was he in the Avengers film, Captain America: Civil War, and obviously Black Panther, but he also appeared in Jackie Robinson, which was produced by our friend Dick Cook,
42.
And in 42. And it shook me that someone who was so vibrant could be battling cancer for 4 years, but we hope his passing will be an inspiration to others to make sure they get the proper medical care. But also we know that his work will continue to inspire for the rest of eternity. So with that, we will end our show. So have a great day, everybody. Take care, and we will talk to you in a couple weeks.